It's good to have this number here. Some chose to leave, and I hear some coughing, and I understand those circumstances. And Jim Smith, wherever you are, you scratch what I told you I was going to preach tonight. And we'll just see how well I know the Bible, maybe. In view of the circumstances, we'll be just a few moments. I'm going to call what I want to say a moral courage. And we're going to look over in the 26th chapter of the book of Matthew and talk just a few minutes. You know, there are times that we look at situations and we say, boy, that took a lot of courage. And you know, it may be something as simple as somebody sitting in an assembly like this, and somebody is able to get up and make a talk. And especially if it's the first time they ever did that, we look at them and we say, it took a good deal of courage to do that. And that's right, it generally does. And after a while, it seems like generally we somewhat get accustomed to doing that. And it doesn't seem like it takes as much courage just to get up off the floor, as it were, and get into the front as it did the first time we did that. Maybe the first time you ever led a song, the first time you ever led a prayer. If you had to do something standing on your feet, you might have been grateful, as I've been in a few times, just to have something to hold on to, because you weren't sure that your knees were going to lock together and support you while you stood there. And you know, sometimes we look at people, and the heroes that maybe come out of our society are people who display extraordinary courage in various aspects of life. I want you to look at, for example, an example of great physical courage here in Matthew chapter 26. And this is a very familiar occasion. You remember that Jesus has instituted the Lord's Supper. They have sung a hymn and left. They've gone to the garden, and there Jesus has gone and he has prayed. And then when they go out, and now they meet this mob that has come to take Jesus. And as you read through the gospel accounts, you notice that though Jesus has walked among them day by day, one of the things that you're able to pretty well see is that they come out now that they're going to take him basically armed to the teeth. They've come out with swords and staffs. Well, they look like they're going against a small garrison of people who are going to be resisting rather than Jesus and those few disciples that are with him. And yet you remember that Judas comes and gives the betrayal kiss, and they then got ready and they took Jesus, verse 50 says. Verse 51, we're told by Matthew, and behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Now, those of us, I think, who are left here this evening know very well that that was Peter. You know, there were only two swords in the band of the disciples. Peter had one of them. And you remember prior to this, Peter had been saying, when Jesus was saying to them, that this night I'm going to be betrayed, even as they partook of the supper. And they all said, well, Lord, including Judas, is it I? And Peter had been saying, now, Lord, never will I deny you. I'll stand there. I'll die with you as necessary. I'm not going to let any untoward thing happen to you. And do you see something? Peter meant what he said here now, didn't he? You just look in the face of what is obviously insurmountable odds. And I mean, this isn't Hollywood. This isn't Errol Flynn swinging across the deck of a pirate ship that's been built, swashbuckling in one of those old movies. It's not the kind of idea that you read about in books where the hero goes up against insurmountable obstacles and innumerable people and is able, James Bond-like, to get away from everything. I mean, Peter is a dead man right here. He drew his sword to defend his Lord. There are just too many people there. They're armed to the teeth. It's certain that he is going to either be put to death or easily neutralized, but he shows he meant what he said. Lord, I'll die with you if it's necessary. And he cut off the ear of the servant, Malchus, of the high priest. Then Jesus gets into the scene and said unto them, put up again thy sword into its place, for all they that shall take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou not that I pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? Strike a note. Remember the song we sang this morning? That's where it came from, isn't it? Why, Jesus said, Peter, I don't need you. I don't need human defense. I don't need swords made out of metal trying to defend me. I don't need that at all. Well, all I'd have to do is just ask, and my Father would provide that which would certainly protect me. But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled that it must be? And so in that same hour said Jesus to the multitudes, Are you come out as against a thief, with swords and staves for to take me? Why, I sat daily with you, teaching in the temple, and you laid no hold on me. But all this was done, that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. I want you to see the great courage of Peter there physically. But do you see how it ends? Just as Jesus said, didn't it? You know, it's one thing to have physical courage. I'll tell you, there are some times it takes physical courage to go knock on somebody's door and just simply to say, I think there's a problem and I'd like to come in if you'll let me and sit down and talk with you. And I'm talking about somebody that you and I know who may have been formerly associated with us, but who's departed from the faith or may be in the process of doing that. And if you've never experienced that fear, you're a better man than I am, Charlie Brown. Because I'm just going to tell you, not very long ago, I went out to see a fella. We were having a meeting, and there was an older preacher. And I was glad, because it was a marriage problem, and I just never have felt like I'm old enough yet to deal with somebody who's been married a whole lot longer than I am and their problems. And I was glad to have him go with me, and we got out there, and we found in the place and sat in the driveway a minute and talked the situation, and then we went to the door and I knocked and nobody answered, and I looked at him and I knocked again. Nobody answered. I'll tell you, the third time I knocked real strong, because I was pretty sure there wasn't anybody home. And when I got in the car, do you know what that older preacher looked at this young preacher and said? He said, Bill, you know, sometimes I'm almost glad I almost stand at the door and pray, Lord, don't let them be home. You know, sometimes it just takes a lot of courage. And if I called his name, you'd know him, because he is a, quote, big name preacher. But I'm just going to tell you, there are some circumstances that arise where it just takes some courage to go do some of the things that need to be done. But do you know something? It takes greater courage in another area to serve the Lord, and it's that kind I want you to think about for just a few more minutes with me. And that's the kind that is definitely lacking here after you see the great physical courage in Peter on his part, and that's moral courage. And I'm going to tell you, it's more important that we have moral courage than we have physical courage. As you continue to read here in Matthew 26, you're aware of the fact then that Jesus was taken and he was tried before Annas, Caiaphas, and the Sanhedrin, and he was condemned to death. Now, as the Sanhedrin is gathering in this farce of a trial that the Jews are having, wherein they determined what they're going to do with Jesus, at the end, really, of Matthew 26, there is a kind of an aside that is given showing us what went on while some of these other things had taken place, and that is Peter showing up at the residence. Notice in verse 69, Now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, Thou wast also with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. Now you know, he said, Lord, I'll die for you. And Jesus finally looked at him and said, Why, Peter, you're going to deny me three times before the cock crows twice tonight. Peter said, No, Lord, it'll never happen. And he shows that great physical courage when he takes that sword in the face of these odds to defend his Lord. But now, notice, it's not a mob. It's not some armed guard. It's not some fellow standing there with a sword stuck right up there in his breastbone, right over his heart, and saying, You're one of those fellows that was with Jesus, and as soon as you say yes, I'm going to shove this thing right on out the other side. Do you see who asked him? There was a damsel that came to him, and she said, You're one of those fellows that's been running around the country with this man Jesus. And he said, Oh, you've got me confused with somebody else. There must be a number of people that are this good looking running around the country, and you've got me confused with one of them. I don't know what you're talking about. And notice he makes himself scarce. He kind of gets out of that situation. And then when he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him, Now notice again, it's not a soldier. It's not somebody that's using force on him. They haven't grabbed him by the arm and said, now tell us the truth, are we going to break this thing off and beat you to death with it? Again, it's another woman. And she said unto them that were there, this fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. Why, I swear to you, you don't know what you're talking about. You've got me confused, he says, with somebody else. And then finally, after a while, there came unto him that stood by and said to Peter, surely thou art also one of them. Now, how did they figure this out? For thy speech betrayeth thee. Now, I'm just going to tell you, you Kentuckians and Tennesseans and Alabamans, you go up where I lived, and you live up there 10 years plus, like Cherie and I did, and the very night we moved out, we stopped for supper at about 10 o'clock at night. As we left town, and the waitress said, looked at Cherie and smiled real sweet and said, where are you from, honey? And do you know why she said that? Because she can put it on like all the rest of you can when she wants to. And she wasn't trying to. She just can't lose that southern drawl she's got. And you know, there are other places. You go up into New England. And I just tell you, sometimes you sit there and scratch your head wondering what they're talking about. Because there are some words that they say that you just don't say them that way. But they know what they're talking about up there. And the same thing's true elsewhere. And that's what happens here. Galilee had its dialect that was recognizable just about like somebody from the south around here. And as a result of that, they said, why, your speech betrays you. And then notice verse 74, and he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. I want you to see something here. Peter had great physical courage, but now he shows a depth of lacking of moral courage. The courage to stand up and to say, yes, I am and I have been with this Jesus of Nazareth. You've got me pegged exactly right. And if you take the life of that man, you may as well take mine too, because I'm going to stand where that man stood. I may not have the exemplary life that that man's got, but I'm going to teach the same message that man's teaching, and I'm going to tell anybody and everybody I can of what you all are fixing to do here and how wrong that is. I'm going to propagate the message this man started. But he didn't. Do you know the best and easiest way? If you want to disassociate yourself with Jesus of Nazareth, I'm going to share a secret with you. If you want the world not to know that you're a Christian, do you want to know the easiest way for the world not to identify you as a Christian? Just go ahead and curse and swear. That's what Peter did. He couldn't convince them by saying, no, you've mistaken me. And he couldn't convince them when he said, now, kind of like we go to court and they say, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? And you say, I do. Peter said, I affirm to you, I swear to you, you've got me confused. If you won't believe me, I'll disassociate myself with Jesus. I use language that he doesn't approve. I just act and conduct myself by the way I talk in a way that will say, no, we must have confused this man. He's not been associated with Jesus, because if he has been, he wouldn't be acting like that. And I'm just going to tell you, if you want the world to know that you're not a Christian, you have little truck with the Lord, you just go ahead and do the same thing, and you'll get the message across plain and clear. And that's what he did. And then, of course, the cock crew. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, which he had said unto him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And he went out and wept bitterly. You see, Peter had great physical courage. And I would say that there probably would be accounts, if we go around the folks here, where there's physical courage been demonstrated by some of you. I mean, it may not be earth-moving. It may not be Sergeant York style, save the universe. It may just have been the fact that you did something that took great physical courage. Listen, it may be something as simple as this. The one thing we do every year is we try to go to a place like Kings Island. We went to Cedar Point. That's been the place we've gone. And I get sick on the merry-go-round. And they've got a ride up there, if you've been there, called the Iron Dragon. And if you like that kind of stuff, that's probably tame. And they'd already been on it once. While they were on it, my mother and I had gone over to the movie theater and watched the big screen where you feel like you're a part of it. And that nearly makes me sick, feeling like I'm flying on those ducks' backs. And we got ready to leave, and they were going to get on it again, and nobody would ride with Aaron. And she looked at me, and I said, "Okay, Aaron, come on. It doesn't look that bad. I'll go with you." And they all figured when we got up there, I'd just walk right on through that ride and walk out the other side. In fact, when we got up there, Aaron said, "Dad, I know you don't like to do this, so just go ahead and go." I said, "No, I told you I'd go," and so I did. I got in there and I got strapped in, and Cherie was in front of me, and I felt like shouting over the top of that thing, "If I never see you again, I want you to know my last words were, I love you, but I'll get you." And we went up, and it just kind of, the bottom dropped out, you know, and we just kind of hung there. And I thought, well, this isn't too bad. And then we did the thing I can't stand. My stomach can't stand. We went straight down. And we whipped around three or four places. And we finally got to a place where we stopped. And I looked at Erin and I said, "Is that it?" She said, "Uh-uh, we're halfway through." And I said, "Well, there's no more going down, is there?" She said, "Oh, no, we don't have any more hills." And you know what we did? We immediately went up so we could come right back down. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's not a lot of courage. And you folks that ride that stuff and don't even think a thing about it, listen, I wasn't sure I could climb the steps down. And if it hadn't been for the mocking laughter of my family as we walked off that thing, I probably would have crawled out of there. Aaron said, "I've got something to tell your grandkids someday." It may be something like that. But I'm going to tell you something. It's the moral courage that we need. The moral courage to be a Christian. The moral courage to stand up and to say, "I not only know Jesus of Nazareth, he's my Lord. He's the King of my life. He's the one that I serve. And I'm not going to use the cursing and the swearing, even though it's all around me. And it certainly isn't going to show that I'm adult or mature or growing up, young people. It just shows you have little knowledge or little to do with Jesus. And you just start thinking now, and I'm going to quit and let you think, of the applications that could be made about moral courage as are seen in the lives of people. People like Joseph. There's an example of moral courage, isn't it? When he refused to lie there in Genesis 39 with Potiphar's wife. And there's Daniel and his friends Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. And you just start thinking of the people in Hebrews chapter 11. And they're there because they were people who had great moral courage. Their courage rested in God. Does yours? If you're here tonight as one who's not a Christian, then what we would encourage you to do is to have the courage. And sometimes that's really what it takes. A lot of folks have said, "After I got those first steps, one or two steps, out into the aisle, I was all right. But I wasn't sure I could make that first step or two." Sometimes it just takes a good deal of courage to step out and to come to the front to say, "I want to be a Christian. I believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and I repent of my sins, and I want to confess Jesus is the Christ and be baptized because that's what he said must be done in order to be a Christian." Don't you have that kind of moral courage tonight in you to step out of self and into the Lord? Won't you do that while we sing with courage?